Hi everyone, it's Gavin J, the best thing since Mist. And you listen to the Therapy Suite right here on UK Health Radio, the world's number one talk health radio. This week, I speak to Abby Yadimisi, where we talk about her experiences with postnatal depression and her book, My Little Ramadan, which also addresses this area. Welcome to the show, Abby. How are you doing?
I'm really great, Gavin. Thanks for having me.
Oh, thanks for coming on the show. Abby, tell us a bit about your background and, you know, how you got to where you are today. I mean, go back years, it's up to you, no worries. I think it'll be good for our listeners to understand that bit.
Okay, I'll try not to tell you my entire life story. So my name's Abby and I live down in Devon in the south of the UK. I'm not from there originally. A lot of people will be able to tell that already from my accent. So I'm from the northeast of England originally, near Newcastle. But I live down in Devon with my Turkish husband and my two sons, who are 11 and 14. And I'm an author of uplifting fiction, uplifting contemporary fiction. Got four books out in the world so far. And like you say, the latest one is called My Little Ramadan. My passions are things like yoga, walking by the sea. I'm very lucky I get to live by the sea. Obviously writing and mental health and creativity for mental health. Does that give you enough of a picture? I could go on and on. I could tell you what chocolate bars I like.
What chocolate bars do you like?
Oh, I love dark chocolate with sea salt, preferably.
Oh, sounds good. How did you get into writing and book writing and that kind of thing?
Well, honestly, like if I look far enough back, I think I was doing it when I was a little kid. Like really, my mum was a journalist, my dad was a journalist, and there was a typewriter at home. That's how old I am. I can remember typewriters. And I remember sitting typewriting my own little stories and things. But I think as I grew up and, you know, went to university, became an adult as such, I just kind of put it to one side because I didn't really believe that it was going to get me anywhere or I was going to be able to pay the rent with it or that kind of thing. And it was a good few years before I picked it up again, you know, maybe 10 or 15 years before I remembered, you know, God, I really love writing. So it's in more recent years, really, since I've become a mum, that I've got back into writing again and now like fulfilling my dream of writing novels, which is great.
Brilliant. Good for you. You know, I think it's good that you found writing again. You started it by the sound of things when you were quite young and then you found it later on. Abby, talk to us about postnatal depression. I did a few shows last year, and as I mentioned before the interview, I think it's a good subject to discuss because it's something that does come up ongoingly, and it may well come up with new mums as well. What is postnatal depression?
So, I mean, I can talk about it from my point of view and my experience. I've also worked in postnatal depression for a few years, which I can go on to tell you about. But for me, my experience of postnatal depression was a real feeling of a loss of like my own self and my own identity, which is the last thing you expect, or it's the last thing I expected when I'd had a baby. I thought, you know, yes, it'll be hard work, it'll be tiring, but I'll have this gorgeous baby and my life will be complete kind of thing, because that's the idea that's sold to us, really. But for me, it couldn't be further from the truth. I just felt like I completely lost myself. I experienced anxiety for probably the first time in my life and very, very low mood, which really wasn't typical of me at all, which was sustained at first for a few weeks and a few months. And that's when I knew I had to kind of find help, really. But yeah, really, it can be a really disconcerting experience if you're somebody who's not had mental health struggles before. Even if you have, it's probably got a new dimension, a new feel to it. And it just feels very, very sad and very scary, to be honest.
From working in the actual services and arena with postnatal depression, from a professional stance, I suppose, what are some of the symptoms maybe that people, because it differs, doesn't it? I think even with general depression, you have depression and then you've got different types of depression. Then you have postnatal depression. Has anyone experienced anything different to what you did?
I think you're right. It's different across the board for different people. It depends on the circumstances they're in. Also depending on what kind of support they've got around them, how well they know themselves, that kind of thing. And there's a very distinct difference, I think, between the baby blues and postnatal depression. And I should say that you can also get depression and change in mood whilst you're pregnant as well. So it's not just after the baby's born. It can be during pregnancy.
Before, I see.
Around the birth or afterwards as well.
Because when I think about it, I always think about it, you know, when you hear postnatal depression, you think, oh, it's afterwards it happens. So it does start beforehand. For some people like yourself or other people, roughly before the actual giving birth, how I suppose, is it a few months before or 6 months or from the beginning, 9 months? Is it like a time frame when it starts?
I don't think you can pin it down. I mean, the first time I experienced it, I didn't have any depression during pregnancy at all. It all happened afterwards. But I have experienced depression during pregnancy as well. So it can be different from one experience to the next, even with the same person. You know, I've worked with some mums who have had maybe 5 children and they haven't ever experienced it till they get to their 6th. It's that random and that strange. And also can dads and partners can suffer from it as well. So it's one of these things that you can't really define. I do think it's a lot to do with the person and how well they know themselves. So if you know that this is unusual for you. So for me, I just didn't laugh. I hardly smiled and I didn't really notice it for weeks, to be honest. I think other people noticed it first in me. So it's about what's different for you. What are the alarm bells that tell you, like, this is not the way I usually do life. This is not how I usually feel. And it's so scary because you're looking after a baby as well. Or
yeah,
looking
on top after of
your
that.
Bump, yeah. Really, yeah. Scary.
Gosh, it must be. Have you worked with people that they experience depression anyway, and then they become pregnant? And then I'm just trying to think about if depression for them during pregnancy or post-pregnancy is the same as someone that's just, you know, hasn't had any depression before, has a baby or just during the pregnancy period, then has a baby and then they have that postnatal depression. Is there any differences between those two groups of people?
The main difference I've noticed, now I'm not a mental health worker, I'm a peer support worker is what I should say. So because I've had lived experience of perinatal mental health challenges, that means I can go and support other people who are experiencing it, and they know that I'm coming from a place of experience and compassion. Excuse me. So I'm not, like, in that sense, I'm not an expert in that sense, but I am somebody who can support other people experiencing it. And the main thing I've noticed between people who have experienced mental health, you know, challenges before being pregnant and having a baby and the ones that haven't, and this is not across the board, this is just something I've observed, is that the people who have had those kinds of challenges before, they know what their red flags are. Sometimes they're less worried about asking for help, because they know that the help is out there and that they can get it. And they know, sometimes they even know what they need to do. They know exactly, like, this is what I need. I need your support with this, this, and this. And that's really refreshing. And I always praise people for that. I always think, how amazing is it that you know yourself so well, that you know what your red flags are, you're not afraid to ask for help, and you want to get better. Because that is part of it as well. Sometimes it can be really hard to feel motivated to get better. But a lot of the people with mental health struggles in the past know that there is glimmer at the end of the tunnel, that, you know, that they can get past it and they can recover, which is really helpful to know that.
Absolutely. And it's interesting what you say, because by the sound of things, it sounds like because of that experience the person had with depression, it's almost like they kind of may be more aware that the pregnancy may be causing them even more depression. So, and because they've gone to services before or spoken to people about before, they're more familiar with the condition, therefore they're able to manage it better. Does that sound about right?
Sometimes I have met some women like that, and it's quite incredible. It doesn't take away from their experience. They're still going through what they're going through. Yeah. And it's not everybody that's able to do that, but some people are. And I'm always kind of amazed by people who know themselves that well, that deeply. And I think what that shows as well is that they have really taken on board the support they've been offered in the past, and they've learned, and they really know when they need to ask for help. Which, I mean, the second time I had postnatal depression, I knew much, much quicker. I know what this is. I know I can get better. I need to ask for help. And just those three things were so helpful, even though I was still feeling low. Everything just felt like a mess. But those three little truths were so important for me and helped me know that things were changed.
Oh, gosh, that must be, I mean, what you ladies go through. I mean, the pregnancy in itself is a lot, you know. That in itself, because it takes a toll on the body and emotionally as well, you know. I mean, putting aside postnatal depression, just emotionally is a lot to take on.
Yeah.
And then if you experience a depression part, that's just such another angle to it, you know. Yeah. How did you know you had postnatal depression?
I didn't, not for a long time, especially the first time. I think I just thought, this is what being a mum is like. And
that makes a lot of sense. Yeah.
I just thought, oh my God, I knew it would be a change. And to be honest, like, just to set the scene a little bit, I'd had an incredible amount of change in my life when I had my first baby. So I'd moved to Turkey to be with my husband because we couldn't get him into this country for visa purposes and things. So we really wanted to be together for the birth. So I had my baby in a foreign country where I didn't speak the language. To be honest, I look back now and I think, what was I thinking? And when I say I had my baby in Turkey, I think a lot of people think, oh, how lovely, she must have been on the beach and, you know, enjoying the sunshine. No, that's not what it was like at all. Yes, it was hot. My son was born in June. It was too hot to take a baby out. So I was very much confined to the apartment. And I didn't know anybody. I couldn't speak the language. I didn't have any family or friends. So there was a lot going on for me when I'd had my first baby. So I was kind of like adjusting, as a lot of people do when they've just had a baby. They're adjusting to this whole new world. It is a bit like you've just been dropped in an alien planet and you don't know where anything is or how to do life in this way. It is really such a huge adjustment to have a baby, no matter how much advice people give you, well-meaning or not. It's huge. So for me, it took a long time to work out that something was wrong because it was already a lot of things to, you know, to get used to. But ultimately, long story short, we moved to the Highlands of Scotland. Again, there's a whole other story behind that. But I remember registering at the doctor's surgery and the health visitor had said to me, I think you should go to the doctor. I'm worried about your mood. And I didn't really know what she meant by that. And I remember it so clearly, Gavin, like it was yesterday. The doctor did the usual like health checks with me. It was like a well woman appointment type thing. My baby wasn't with me. I think he must have been with my husband. And she just turned to me and she said, do you feel well? And I just, in that moment, that question, I knew that the answer was no. But no one had asked me that. No one had asked me anything like that since my baby had come along. So I just said no and burst into tears. And it was from that point onwards that it was like, okay, tell me more. Let's do something about this. You're not alone. And if she hadn't asked me that very perfectly timed question, I don't know how much longer it would have taken me to figure it out.
It sounds like she kind of knew.
Yeah.
And then because she looked for. Yeah, I'm just thinking because the way you explained it, it sounds like to me she kind of knew, but she wanted you to know in a way.
I think then, I mean, she was a very insightful doctor when I look back, and that's probably exactly what happened.
Yeah, it sounds it because nobody wants to be told, like, oh, you know what, I think you've got postnatal depression. And then,
true.
Do you see what I mean? And she's probably thinking, do you know what? Let me ask her the question here. How are you feeling? Do you feel okay?
Mm-hmm.
And it sounds like all the emotions all hit you at that point.
Yeah.
And then obviously, and it's good you were honest about what was going on.
Yeah.
I think some people sometimes don't want to be too honest, especially with people that they don't know. And that's totally understandable, you know?
Absolutely, yeah. Surgery can be a little bit daunting, can't it, for the best of us sometimes. And I remember this particular doctor was like just a gift. She had like an essential oil burning in her office. It was really lovely. And just, she was just so kind and nice. And
didn't sound like an office. It sounded like a yoga place, one of those relaxing massage places. Yeah,
exactly. And that really helped me open up, just the fact that she was so kind of just kind and lovely and open.
Oh, we're just going to a quick ad break. And we'll be right back.
UK Health Radio.
The station that makes you feel good.
UK Health Radio.
The station that makes you feel good.
So, Abby, you was in Turkey, and June is hot. It was June that you were there. Is that right?
Mm-hmm.
I've been to Turkey. I know how hot it is. It's the kind of heat where when you get out of the shower, you're sweating.
Yeah,
it's that kind of heat. I remember when I went, I think it was 40, 45 degrees. It might have been 50 degrees. I can't remember. Marmaris, I don't know. But it was hot. So, I mean, well done on, as well as everything else going on, you were in a different country. No family there as well, you were mentioning. I'm wondering if your emotions were affected more because did you feel more alone when you were out there, kind of thing? Was it the first birth, basically?
My first baby was born in Turkey. When I look back, I think I was incredibly lonely, actually. But at the time, I'm one of these people who tries to make the best of things, and I'm always trying to look for the positives, but sometimes that can only take you so far, and you've got to face up to how you actually feel.
I agree with that.
I look back and I think I don't actually know how I did it. My husband worked very long hours, you know. I didn't get to see him until about 9 o'clock at night each night. It's just really, really difficult. When I was working throughout COVID, working with mums to support them, a lot of how they described how their life was during lockdown reminded me of when I was in Turkey, actually.
Oh gosh. Funny enough.
Yeah, just because it was so hot, like you say, outside, and I couldn't really go outside until about 9 o'clock at night, when it would finally cool down a little bit. When most mums would be putting their babies in the bath and putting them to bed, I was dressing mine and going out, because it was just too much to be in an apartment all day.
No, absolutely. I just think it's, you know, I mean, obviously the aircon would have helped as well, so, which is a big must. Is there a difference between baby blues and postnatal depression?
Yes, I think there is. And as I said, I'm not a medical expert, but what I understand it to be is the baby blues is something that happens quite quickly after delivery, maybe a few days after or within the same week. It's like a low-level irritability, impatience, obviously fatigue, maybe a little bit of tearfulness and sadness, but it does disappear after a few days, whereas postnatal depression or postnatal anxiety is something that's going to last a lot longer than a few days. They say typically if it's longer than 2 weeks, then that's the time to start looking for support. And it can be a lot more intense feelings. So things like rage, extreme stress, detachment from baby, you know, a loss of the sense of self. So yeah, they are quite different. And I didn't know, but my postnatal depression wasn't detected till quite a long time afterwards. And I didn't realize you could get it so, so long after the birth. I didn't know the first time. I mean, I know a lot more about it now, but then I that's probably one of the reasons I didn't realize that's what I had. Cause I thought, well, it can't be that. I had my baby ages ago.
Well, that's interesting. I assume as us guys do anyway, that's what we're usually wrong. But basically it happened just afterwards. You know, it could take a few weeks, maybe a month by most. How long afterwards did you realize that you had postnatal depression?
Oh, I realized when my baby was around 11, 12 months old. So it was almost a year, but that's when it was detected. That's when I was told this is what this is. But I think it probably started at around 6 months.
Oh gosh, that's a long time.
Yeah, and it can take a while to kick in, and there's lots of different factors, you know. It's not just to do with hormones and things, it's also to do with your situation, your support system, other things going on in your life, how you feel about becoming a parent, you know. There's all sorts of things going on.
So 6 months, and did you notice during that 6 months post natal, you know, after having the baby, that the emotions or the symptoms of depression were becoming worse, or did it just kind of hit you out of nowhere kind of thing?
It definitely got worse over time for me. I mean, it might be different for other people, but for me, it all kind of started when I looked back on it, because I did actually get some therapy. And when I looked back on it, it started when my baby was around 6 months old and I went to visit my husband's family. And they live in southeast Turkey, which is where the earthquake has just hit. So that gives people an idea of whereabouts they are. They're all okay, by the way.
Oh, that's good to hear.
Okay, yeah, they're all okay. Brilliant. We went to visit them, and obviously they wanted to meet their new grandson. So we went there, and I think that was for me when the mood really changed and really kind of twisted into something else, because maybe being immersed in a different culture, and it is in a very, very different culture to what we have here in this country. I think that immersion made me really question, like, am I good enough as a mum? You know, I'd look at all the other mums there, my husband's sisters and his aunts and even his mum. and I'd look at them, and it is such a different culture, and they absolutely pride themselves on motherhood. And I just looked at them, I thought, they're so natural, they know what they're doing, and I felt like everything I did was wrong. And of course it wasn't, but at the time that was the feeling.
You're a new mum.
Yeah, but you know, it's such a vulnerable place to be, and to be a new mum. It can be empowering as well.
Yeah.
But also quite vulnerable.
No, absolutely. I mean, look, you as a new mum, I don't think, maybe you had high expectations of yourself. Maybe that's possibly what it is. Well,
yeah.
Because I think often ladies do, you know, when you your first time you're becoming a mum, and you're watching, I suppose you watch other people. I mean, taking away from the family, you're watching people generally. You're watching other mums, and even on the build up, you know, during the pregnancy, you're watching other, you know, parents, what they're doing, and you're watching other people. You think about your childhood as well, and you think about all sorts. And it must be a lot to take on, you know. So, did you feel that you had? Did you put any added pressure on yourself?
Yeah, I think I'm the kind of person who, you know, I'm quite a high achiever. I try to be a high achiever. Not so much these days, to be honest, but back then I did. And I had, like you say, I had high expectations. But I think the other thing is that a lot of the imagery that we are fed, a lot of the ideas that we are given about motherhood are completely unrealistic. I'm not sure whether that's getting worse or better with social media, because, you know, my kids are
Don't.
I know. I know, it's a whole other topic, isn't it?
Oh my gosh. Everyone's, I don't know. It's
I just think
too much.
Sometimes mums look at these images and think, well, that'll be me, you know, it'll be so natural. The feelings will come naturally, breastfeeding will come naturally, I'll wake up when they cry, it'll all happen naturally because that's what women are supposed to do. But actually, we're human, and like you say,
absolutely,
we've never done it before. There's no one manual that tells you how to do it. There's a million different manuals, and they're all really confusing.
No, absolutely. And I think being a parent in itself is a big challenge, you know, because it's a lot to take on. You've got all these little psychologies, you know, running around you, and, you know, you've got to subconsciously understand him or her. And it's there's so much involved. And along with, if someone experiences postnatal depression, it adds a lot more pressure already that exists.
Yeah.
You know, I just think it's a huge challenging itself. Treatment. Did you get any treatment at all for the postnatal depression, and did it help?
Yes, I did eventually. So after I saw that lovely doctor, she suggested a bit more time with my health visitor, who was really understanding and really lovely, and did some mental health questionnaires with me. And I remember doing those and being quite shocked at how strongly it did show that I did have postnatal depression. And then, do you know, there was quite a few, there's a bit of a hiatus, quite a few weeks where nothing happened. But eventually the health visitor found out about a charity who were based near where I lived, up in the Highlands of Scotland at the time. And they offered free CBT counselling to mums who were suffering.
Cognitive behavioural therapy, just for our listeners. Yeah, CBT.
That's right, yeah. So I was really lucky that I managed to access a course of CBT, and that hand in hand with some guidance from the health visitor, some holistic advice from the doctor, plus like trying my best to help myself. So things like getting outside for walks, going to the toddler group, honestly, that really helped me. Like just biting the bullet and just going and trying to speak to other parents was really helpful. And then, of course, getting outdoors, exercise, like I did a little bit of journaling as well, and some writing as well. So it was a combination, as it often is.
Brilliant. Was there any medicinal treatment at all?
Not for me. It was discussed. We did chat about it. And sometimes I look back on that time and I think, God, would I have got better quicker if I had gone down the medication route? But you know, we'll never know the answer to that. And at the time I just felt like I'll try the CBT first, see how I get on. And it's certainly something I would have considered if I hadn't started to notice an improvement, but luckily I did start to feel better with the interventions that I chose.
That's brilliant. Did social interaction help as well, maybe friends, family?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I don't know what it is about me and my husband. We do tend to move to far-flung places. So why we were in the Highlands of Scotland, again, when I just had a baby, I don't really know why we did that. But I didn't have many family members around me. I had to make new friends. So as I say, going to the parent and toddlers group was absolutely key for me. And I know that's hard for a lot of people. Luckily, a lot of the groups are back up and running now after COVID. But I just forced myself to do it. And I forced myself to sit down next to people and take a deep breath and ask them about themselves and share a cup of coffee. And it just, I look back and I can see how that really, really helped me just getting to know other mums and realizing that everyone else is not this perfect parent I think they are. We all have our struggles.
No, of course. When you were going through the postnatal depression, did it affect your sleep at all?
Well, it can go either way, I think. For me, I wanted to sleep all of the time. So that was one of the symptoms, I guess, was this extreme fatigue. And so sleep for me was not a problem other than obviously my baby was waking up. So I was having to get up as we have to. But I remember him going for a nap in the afternoon and I would go for a nap as well. And I'd lie there when we both woke up and not want to get up. And I remember that was one of the strongest symptoms in the afternoon naps, not wanting to get up, just wanting to go back to sleep until the next morning. And so for me, it was like a sense of wanting to hide away. But other people can get the exact opposite and can be feel too anxious or flighty to sleep. And it can be a real struggle. I think for me it was hard because no matter how much sleep I had, and there wasn't a lot really when you've got a new baby, but no matter how much sleep I had, I never felt refreshed, and that's quite a miserable place to be. Yeah, but it got better in the end.
Was your appetite affected at all?
Yes, yeah, definitely. Again, that's another one where it can go either way. For me, my appetite becomes less, so I just don't want to eat anything. You know, it's almost like I've got a lump in my throat and anything I swallow, it just feels wrong, which is another thing that can be quite dangerous. And you've got to look after yourself when you've got a new baby. So, yeah, appetite is another thing. Things like sleep and appetite are the things to look out for. Sleep, appetite, mood. Yeah.
No, of course, of course. We're just going to another ad break and we'll be right back.
UK Health Radio.
The station that makes you feel good. The station that makes you feel good.
So, Abby, thank you so far. I mean, we've just been discussing about your experiences with postnatal depression and a bit about services and other people's experiences as well. Were there any creative practices that helped at all with postnatal depression?
There were for me. I'm a really creative person, always have been. And I think I knew once I started to feel that tiny little smidge better, I was like, right, I need to start doing something creative. It's gonna help me feel better. So apart from, like I say, getting involved with a toddler group and doing posters and things for them, it was writing for me. So writing is something, as I say, that I've always loved doing. I'd already, before I had my first baby, I'd already had an idea for a book and I'd already written quite a bit of it, quite a substantial amount, a few thousand words. And I thought, right, I really want to finish this novel. And I didn't really see how I was going to do it with a little baby and no support, no people around me to help. But I just thought, I've just got to find a way just to get into it. So I started writing a little bit in my notebook. I started getting my laptop out, like planning out chapters and things. And eventually, 10 minutes here, 20 minutes there, I did get into a little bit of a pattern with it and realised that I could achieve quite a lot in quite a short window of time. Yes, it wasn't the amount of time that I really wanted. I wanted hours, maybe days at a time to write. But as a mum, that was one of the feelings I was learning to deal with, is that kind of frustration of like, oh God, I just want to do the whole thing and not part of the thing. I got used to only being able to do part of the thing and knowing that that was better than nothing. So yeah, for me, it was writing.
That's brilliant. And at that time, is that when you started writing your books? And because you have four books, don't you?
I've got four books. So the first three are a trilogy, a series of books that run from beginning to end, and they're called the Life is Yours trilogy. And that is what I'd started writing before I had my first son, and what I picked up again during postnatal depression to help me recover. And I just kept writing and kept writing and finally got all three books done. I think when my son was about 9 or something. So that sounds almost like it took me 10 years to write these books. But actually, there was three of them. Three novels in 10 years is actually not that bad for someone who's got two small children. So I feel like I did okay. And it just shows the tenaciousness of my personality, is that I just wouldn't let go of this idea of finishing these books. I was like, I don't care. One day I'm going to finish them. But those books are about heartbreak. They're about one woman who kind of transforms the grief and the turmoil of heartbreak into like an incredibly magical year for her. So the book that I'm about to bring out, which is called My Little Ramadan, is about motherhood. So I'm really excited to write this one because it tackles the themes that we're talking about in this chat, and they're so important to me.
Is it basically a story, but with messages in it, basically?
Yeah, I suppose it is. I try to make it a story first and foremost because I'm a really avid reader, and when I pick up a book, I just want to be engrossed in the story. I don't want to be thinking, oh, what's the life lesson I'm learning here? It takes you out of the story, doesn't it? So what I try to do is embed it really subtly and make it like a really, really integral part of the story so that it just happens effortlessly. And I hope that that's how the readers actually experience it. So yeah, it is a story first and foremost, but if you learn something from it or if there's something in it that resonates with you, then even better.
Can you tell us a little bit about it?
Yeah. So My Little Ramadan is about one exhausted mum called Jess, who hopes that fasting for Ramadan to support her Muslim husband will reveal the secrets to motherhood. So she'll understand motherhood, she'll understand life, she'll understand everything, even herself, better than she did before. And she hopes to go through, I don't know if your listeners are familiar with Ramadan, but it's a holy month in the Islamic calendar. And for 30 days or so, they fast from sunrise to sunset. So there's no water, no food passes the lips. It's also about things like no crosswords, no anger, no stress, no gossip, no swearing. It's a whole spiritual practice, and there's a lot more to it than I can cover right now. But Jess decides to fast for Ramadan for that month just to see if it helps her somehow, if it helps her delve into motherhood a little bit deeper so she can understand how to be a better mom, how to be a better person. But as you can imagine, she gets a lot more than she bargained for along the way.
No, of course. I mean, obviously motherhood and experiencing personal depression, there's a lot going on there, you know.
Yeah.
As you know, I'm just thinking in terms of how your lived experience and writing the books, has that been able to help other people that you know or other people generally in society?
So in terms of my lived experience of postnatal depression, as I said, a lot of the themes have gone into the book, which I really hope mums and dads read this book and think, oh my God, I know exactly how that feels. And I hope that there's some moments that are, you know, funny and humorous that they can chuckle at, but also moments that touch the heart and make them feel like they're not alone. Because I think that's a lot of it, you know, is not feeling like you're alone, like you're not the only person who's felt like this, that you're still human kind of thing. But that's still to come out on the 23rd of March. So I'll have to let you know where, you know, what feedback I get and whether it helps support people or not. But as well as that, for the last 4 years, 4 to 5 years, I've been working for a charity that's based down in the southwest of the country in Bristol, called Bluebell Care. And I was what they call a buddy. So a buddy is a peer support worker, somebody with lived experience like me who understands what it's like to go through perinatal mental health challenges. And I worked one-to-one with mums, went to see them, went for a cup of coffee with them, listened to their struggles, sometimes helped them get out and about, go to the park, maybe help them get to toddler groups, that kind of thing. Anything that supports their recovery and their well-being. And also I was part of helping to run a group called the Comfort Zone Group, which is a course which is all about self-care and well-being during the perinatal period. So yes, I have really been lucky being able to use my lived experience for that.
Gosh, that's brilliant. That's brilliant.
Yeah, it's been great.
Do you know any statistics about postnatal depression in the UK?
Oh, I wish I did.
I'm just actually just no. looking up right now.
I know it's really common though, a lot more
it
than
it is. It really is. I'm looking at the stats now. It says it's a common problem affecting more than one in every 10 women. Within a year of giving birth.
I think it might be.
Within a year, that makes a lot of sense. And it can affect fathers and partners, as we were discussing before the interview.
It can, yeah.
1 out of 10, I mean, that's a lot. It's. Yeah. I remember talking to a few people last year about postnatal depression, and they were talking about, now we're talking about going back years, apparently it was something that was not as well, there was not as much awareness for it as there is now, basically.
Yeah, that's true.
Did you find that as well?
Oh, definitely. I mean, since I had my struggles, it's changed a lot. The landscape has changed so much. What's happening now is that across the whole of the country, and probably beyond as well, I would imagine, across the whole world, really, women and men who have had this lived experience are starting their own services, their own support services, because they want people to not have to struggle the way they did. Mm. And they want to be able to support. So there's a lot of peer support services popping up on a grassroots level. Some of them are absolutely fantastic. I mean, that's how I got my support. I got my support from a charity. A lot of the statistic you just mentioned, it is quite high. And a lot of the people who suffer from perinatal mental health challenges won't meet the threshold for NHS support. So they won't be like severe enough to go and get help from their local perinatal mental health team. And that's where the community grassroots kind of sector steps in and says, well, let us help you, let us support you. And it can be a really special space because, you know, if you're working with someone who's got lived experience and the passion and also has a little bit of flexibility about the kind of service they can offer you and make it a bit more tailored, then that's just fantastic. And it is definitely, it's growing all the time, this sector, which for me, I just think is so encouraging. It's so special that that's happening nationally.
No, absolutely. Is there, so there's a threshold of postnatal depression that someone needs to experience to get a service. Is that right? Is that?
Well, I guess there's a threshold where that midwives, health visitors, GPs would start to notice, you know, certain symptoms, signs and symptoms, and that's when they might refer on. A lot of, not all NHS trusts, but a lot of NHS trusts now have perinatal mental health teams, and they're supposed to, I might be wrong, but my understanding of this is that they're supposed to, they help support families where it's moderate to severe, where the needs are moderate to severe. But there's a whole other bandwidth of families where they're mild to moderate. And what you don't want is that mild to moderate to change into moderate to severe. I mean, these are like, oh, you know, they're just labels. It can cross over. Of course it can. But you don't want it to get any worse. So that early intervention when somebody's feeling those, you know, those symptoms in the early days are so important. And that's something that like the charities and the grassroots level groups can really help with.
No, absolutely. Mm. And also the postnatal depression is more common and highest among those 18 to 24. Which is interesting. And then it starts to decline, my understanding, is the number of people that experienced postnatal depression. Now this is a subject that I've just kind of brought out of nowhere, but do you know why that might be? I'm making a big assumptions now. I'm thinking maybe it's because of the age, the person's quite young, becoming a new mum. That might be some of the pressures, some of the things we mentioned early on, you know. But 18 to 24 seems to be the highest level where there's postnatal depression, and then it eases off as a person goes into 30s and that kind of thing.
I think that's probably right. That sounds like it fits with my experience of being a peer support worker for Bluebell. So I think most of the mums that I've supported, actually probably a bit of a wider gap, so 18 to probably about 28, 29, and then maybe the mums from about 38 onwards as well. Not to say there aren't people in between, of course there are. That figure kind of fits with my experience of supporting families.
Yeah, no, of course. Mm. And there's some factors that I think may exacerbate postnatal depression as well, like changes in lifestyle, strains on relationships, stressful life events. And that's not, you know, and also one is images of motherhood, which is something you mentioned early on, which obviously puts that pressure on people and that kind of thing, you know. Yeah. So, it's... When I started the show a few years ago and I started hearing more about it, and it was never, I still think there could be more awareness for it, if I'm going to be honest with you. And also men experience postnatal depression as well. I only found this out last year. I'll be honest with you. I had no idea. And then I had someone on the show, a gentleman came on to talk about his experiences as well. So I had a lady's experience, a gentleman's experience, just to get an idea from both sides. And it can affect the family as a whole, by the sound of things.
Oh, it definitely can. Absolutely. I mean, you know what it's like yourself. If there's one person in your family, in the household, who's not themselves, and other people are worried about them, and there's an energy in the house, isn't there, of worry, concern, stress, and then that can bring other people down. And to be honest, that just adds to it, because the person, maybe the mum or the dad who's originally had those feelings then feels shameful and guilty about that. So it becomes a whole family experience, however that family might look. And, you know, we've got to remember that families look all different ways. It's not always mum and dad. There's loads of things that can exacerbate it. And yeah, it absolutely affects partners and the wider family without a doubt.
Yeah. I mean, I don't have children myself, but I've noticed, I'm in my line of work in social services, I've met many families. Yeah. And personally, I've obviously been into my family household and other people's family. And, you know, that in its, if there's something going on and there's, you know, tension or there's low moods or whatever it might be, that can generally affect you anyway, you know?
Yeah.
But if you're experiencing postnatal depression on top of all of that, that's like a nightmare.
Yeah. And also it's just the stresses and strains of parenthood is intense even when you're feeling at your best. So, you know, sometimes I just think these people are heroes, these people who've been through this, because they've still managed to bring up their children and be there and do the things they needed to do. And one of the big things that we try to drive home with Bluebell Care is for those parents to really try and start taking care of themselves, which can seem really impossible at the beginning because you think, well, when have I got time to do that? But it's about finding those little pockets of time. And we even do things like we look at 1 minute self-care ideas, things that literally just take seconds just to keep, you know, really the neural pathways in your brain to kind of train them into thinking positively about yourself and valuing yourself and knowing that you are important in this family, you are important in this household. And if you don't look after yourself, who will? But it can be really difficult.
Can you tell any of our listeners, or just generally anyone listening, basically, what to look out for to be mindful that they may be possibly experiencing postnatal depression?
Well, I first of all say that it's really common, as you said earlier from your statistic that you found out. It's not rare. It's a really common thing. That doesn't diminish how you're feeling, but it's certainly very common. And I would say that because, you know, if your mood's dipped or you've got anxiety or things just don't feel right, it is absolutely not a reflection on your parenting or your right to be a parent. Because for me, that was one of the biggest things, was like, well, maybe I'm not cut out to be a mum. I'm not as good as the other mums. All this kind of thought, which is not helpful. And it doesn't last forever. It is something that will not always be like this. There is help available. So that's what I would say. And I would say, even if you're not really sure if it's postnatal depression or perinatal mental health worries, it would be a really good idea anyway to reach out. And that would either be your GP, your midwife, your health visitor. Or this is something that I'd really like to tell parents and listeners about. There's an organization partnership, actually, that I also work for called the Hearts and Minds Partnership. And if you just type it into Google, Hearts and Minds Partnership, the website should come up, and they have an online digital map, and it's England wide. And you can type in your postcode, your village, your town, and it will come up with all the perinatal mental health support groups in your area. Not the NHS ones, but the grassroots kind of charities, local groups, and it will show you what's available near you. So that is something that is so helpful for parents, and you can find a little bit of information about it on the map, and you can click through to their social media or to their website and find out more. And a lot of these organizations, you know, are self-referral, not all the time, but some of them are, and you can just give them a ring and ask them more about what they do and whether they can support you. I absolutely think reaching out, asking someone for help is so, so important.
Can someone be anonymous and call them as well?
Sorry, say again?
Can someone be anonymous as well and call them?
Yeah, absolutely. That kind of thing very highly respected. Yeah, and people don't have to divulge things they don't want to. Yeah.
Brilliant. I'm just asking that because I'm just aware that some people might feel uncomfortable about talking about the subject anyway. And sometimes if they know they're talking to someone where it won't kind of go anywhere, they don't know who they are as well and that kind of thing.
Absolutely.
It might help, you know. Yeah. Where can people find out more about your books? Where can they purchase them from?
It's good old Amazon for my books. So if you go onto Amazon and type in my name, which I know is a bit of a nightmare for people to spell, but if that's, you know, that's tricky because it is a bit of a nightmare. If you type in Life Is Yours or the Life Is Yours trilogy, those books will come up, or My Little Ramadan, they'll come up on Amazon. And then I also have my own website where you can find out loads about me, and I'm all across social media as well. So I'm really quite active on social media, and I love when people reach out and want to chat to me. So I will always respond to messages and things.
Oh, brilliant. Where can people find you on social media?
I am on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook and TikTok. And I think on all of those, I'm just Abigail Yardumja. But on Instagram, it's with author at the end, Abigail Yardomge author, and the same on TikTok.
So if people look for My Little Ramadan as a book, they'll see your name. Yes. And they can find you. And also, if it's okay, if you send me a link, I can basically also advertise it on my Instagram, you know, where to find you as well. Because I usually do a little post afterwards as well. Yeah, it's not a problem, you know. Abby, thank you so much for your time today. It's been brilliant.
You're welcome. I really love chatting with you.
Brilliant. I really appreciate you coming on the show. It's such a worthwhile subject as well.
Yeah.
And you've been really helpful talking about your own experiences as well as, you know, other people's experiences and also the services that you work in and charities, etc. I think it's absolutely invaluable. So thank you very much.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
And thank you to all our listeners. You know, you can find me on Instagram at GavinJ417. Until next time, take care.